News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage.
In association with AIR.
You were listening earlier on. You will have heard Mark Wise, the Israel correspondent with the Irish Times, speaking to us from Jerusalem. And he said that the situation there looked an awful lot like a return to full-scale war. This is after Israel fired missiles at Beirut, which prompted Iran to attack Israel, which prompted Israel to retaliate against Iran. Meanwhile, theoretically, there is a ceasefire and peace talks are progressing. Sean Bell is with us, former fighter pilot, now military analyst and co-host of the Red Matrix podcast. What impact will all of the belligerents have on those peace talks, Sean?
Yeah, good morning, Anton. Well, I mean, like you, I was watching, I suspect, with a degree of horror, watching this all unfold in the last 24 hours. I'm hopeful that because President Trump desperately needs an off-ramp, and he is therefore in negotiations with Iran. And there's been a ceasefire since early April as they try and close in on a deal. The irritation to this has been obviously trying to get the Lebanon and the fights between Israel and the Hezbollah on that same ceasefire. Now, we understood that the most recent one, I think on the 4th of June, was dependent on Hezbollah not attacking. But it looks like every other ceasefire between the Israelis and Hezbollah, that actually it hasn't been worth the paper it's written on. And the challenge here, I suspect, is just how much influence President Trump actually has over Prime Minister Netanyahu. You recall it was only a few days ago that they had a very heated conversation with some very colourful language, because the risk is that Israel's attempt to solve the Hezbollah problem once in a generation opportunity may well compromise President Trump's ability to do a deal.
And that colourful language, he subsequently confirmed that he had referred to him on the phone, told him that he was, quote, effing crazy. He has since given an interview to the Financial Times where he has said that Benjamin Netanyahu won't have any choice in respect of what happens with the final deal. He said, I call all the shots. He doesn't call the shots. I mean, militarily and economically, there is some truth in all of that. But Benjamin Netanyahu has a lifelong capacity to do exactly what he wants.
Yes, and I think what's interesting there is you've characterised, I think, I mean, let's face it, America is the strategic guarantor of security for Israel. And therefore, effectively, President Trump should hold all the cards. The harsh reality is, though, that Benjamin Netanyahu also knows that he cannot be seen to be an American lapdog. He has some hardliners in the government, and he will only stay in power if he's seen to look after Israel's national interests first. And I suspect that he also gambles that actually whatever he does with President Trump, he may irritate him, he may cause him to get very angry, but actually America would never walk away from Israel, because the American people would never allow America to walk away from Israel. And therefore, it might well be at the moment, if it's true that Netanyahu sees great potential in moving further and further into southern Lebanon, we're not quite sure of their ambitions, but it does look quite a significant land grab that's going on at the moment. It won't solve the Hezbollah problem. Let's be absolutely clear. All it does is move the problem back away, and there'll be another 10 years or 20 years and it'll return in exactly the same form. So I do think that at the moment what we're seeing is a test of resolve by President Trump, and also Prime Minister Netanyahu trying to keep his cabinet on side.
Now, what of the other side in all of this? Because do you remember that cliche about a coloniser and an indigenous population where the response was, you have all of the watches and we have all of the time? I assume yes. The same applies with Iran. They are under no pressure to rush.
Well, then that's an interesting question, Anton, because if you were to look at Iran as a democracy, it's not, but let's look at it as a democracy. The people of Iran are suffering greatly. There were millions in the poverty line before the war. Now it's been made significantly worse. The inflation's gone through the roof. They're not getting the oil revenues through. So life is becoming very, very difficult for Iran. So on any sort of metric, normal metric, you'd say that Iran would need a deal faster than America would. But the harsh reality is it's not a democracy. And the Iranian government are still in control. They've made a lot of money over the years. They don't need to solve this anytime soon. What they want to do is remain in power. And for the first time, probably in a generation, they feel they've got the upper hand against America. They know President Trump needs to get out of this. I mean, at the moment, I think the Americans are suffering fuel costs over $4 a gallon. Now, you'll have to excuse my lack of sympathy there, because that's about in the UK about 60p a litre. We're paying about treble that in the UK at the moment. But the point is, it's deeply unpopular war. President Trump has got these midterms coming up, and I suspect Iran is gambling that America needs an off-ramp faster than they do.
Sean, before I let you go on the topic of off-ramps, Vladimir Putin and his possible need for one, if we can turn to Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky is in the UK today. He is due to be meeting with King Charles, and he's also due to be meeting with a number of European leaders to continue building public support for the cause in Ukraine. He sent a letter to Vladimir Putin seeking direct face-to-face talks and has offered to freeze the front lines to undertake those talks. Is that all because he feels this is what he needs to do to show willing publicly, or is there a real chance of material talks taking place?
Yeah, I mean, I go to Ukraine periodically, and it's really difficult to tell on a visit what the whole of the country feels. But I do sense a degree of war weariness in Ukraine. And where a year or so ago, they all believed that eventually they'd kick the Russians out, there's more a view that some sort of deal has to be made. The price being paid is so huge. And President Zelensky's popularity has not been quite as strong of late as it was. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if some of this is to demonstrate that Zelensky is not digging in. He is prepared to talk. But if you zoom out from that, one of the reasons Zelensky's come to the UK and he gets such a reception is because for Europe, largely we looked at Ukraine as being, well, it's not part of NATO, it's not our problem. But of course, now with American support of NATO looking increasingly flaky and a European-led NATO probably being the only way forward, Russia's invasion of Ukraine starts to feel like an existential threat to Europe itself. And therefore, a lot of European leaders are recognizing that we can't ignore the problem. We've got to do more about it. American weapons are in short supply. They're restocking their stockpiles. Therefore, what more can Europe do to make sure that Ukraine can not only survive but fight back? I think we're a long way away from Ukraine having the upper hand, but there is no doubt that Russia is also hurting as well as Ukraine is.
Sean, as ever, thank you. Sean Bell, former military fighter pilot and now military analyst with and co-host of the Red Matrix podcast.
News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage.
In association with AIR.
Weekday mornings at 7. News Talk. Conversation that counts.